morning. If you have your Bibles and want to read along with us, you can go ahead and turn to Luke chapter 16. Luke chapter 16. This morning we're going to take our lesson from a story that Jesus gave. The story of a certain rich man and a certain beggar named Lazarus. Luke chapter 16. And we read through this, we'll consider whether or not we should consider whether or not this is a real story or a parable. It's not real clear here if Jesus is just giving a parable and these are not real individuals, or if this is a real story that he's telling of some particular people. But he says a certain man and a certain beggar named Lazarus. And as I read through this and considered on this, I wonder if Charles Dickens didn't get his inspiration for the Christmas Carol from this teaching of Jesus. At least somewhat the influence of this teaching influenced him in his thought and in the way this was written. Let's start with verse 19. Luke chapter 6, verse 19. We'll read about this, just this verse, and read about this first man in this story. It says, "There was a certain rich man, which was clothed in purple and fine linen, and fared sumptuously every day." And we're going to stop here and just look at this first man. Make sure that we understand the first person that he's talking about here. It says he was rich. He was a wealthy man. And we like that. You know, we don't consider that as something terrible. Someone comes up to us and says, "I'm going to make you a wealthy man. I'm going to make you a wealthy person." We would consider that a good thing. We like that about this man as we start reading. And we see the next thing, it says he's clothed in purple. And at this time, purple was a very expensive thing to get, to be able to have your clothes that were dyed somewhat blue and somewhat red and had this purple. It was very expensive and it indicated royalty. This clothes of purple was a way of indicating honor to someone. And usually it was royalty, someone with power. Maybe that's how he got to be so wealthy, was because he had power. And we see all the way back, this was for a long time. Purple is used to indicate that you have power and royalty and that you should be honored. We see all the way back to the story of Esther, in the book of Esther. Mordecai, at the end of the book, Mordecai was sent out. He now has the position of Haman, and Haman has been hanged, and the Jews have been saved and given that decree. But anyhow, Mordecai is sent out supposed to be honored by this new position that he has, and the way they honored him is that they dressed him in special clothes, and part of that was fine linen and purple, just like this person. Fine linen, rich man, he had fine linen and purple, and fine linen would be clothes that was comfortable. And we like to see someone who is comfortable. We like to be around someone who is comfortable. Jesus said of us that soft clothes, people who wear soft clothes, was in the king's house. Whenever he was talking about John the Baptist, he said, "What went ye out to see?" And he said, "Was it someone in soft clothes?" But no, soft clothes would be someone from the king's house. And so we can see this man has got a special position among men in that he wears this purple and fine linen. And it says that he fared sumptuously every day. And I had in my mind what I thought fair sumptuously means, so I went to look and see if, you know, fair, do you ever think that meant he was lucky? He had well, things went well with him every day. But in some translations it said that he ate well. Fared sumptuously meant that he ate well every day. And so I started looking a little closer, and literally the Greek word, the fared, means to make merry. The word that got translated into fair meant to make merry. And then the sumptuously, you could say in splendor. They said literally it might be to make merry in splendor. He made merry. He was happy. and he did it well. He did a good job of enjoying himself every day. And this same thing is this word that we see here, if you want to compare and look up a little bit, it's the same word that is used in Luke chapter 15 when Jesus gave the parable of the prodigal son. It said when the son came back, the father did this very same thing as this mate Mary. So that's this rich man. He's a very rich man. He has power and honor. And he, every day, it says that he made merry every day. He fared sumptuously every day. We would say this was a blessed man or a lucky man. We would consider him as being very lucky or very blessed. And at least from the description that we see that Jesus gave here, we would call this man a success. Wouldn't we? We look at this description and just stop here. The things that Jesus said about this man, we would say he's a successful man. We might think we would want to be this person. We might would want to have this kind of person for our friend. But we have to be careful in thinking this way. In the book of Timothy, 1 Timothy 6 and 5, it says, "Perverse disputing of men of corrupt mind and destitute of the truth, supposing that godliness is gained from such, turn away." Is that what we do? We suppose that gain is godliness? He says, "From such, turn away, supposing that gain is godliness." He says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain." And sometimes that might be the way that we think in our culture, is that godliness and that gain is godliness. We might think this way, that our experience, just looking at experience, we don't need someone else to tell us what's right and wrong. We might just look at experience and say, hey, if it works, it's right. If it works for them, it must be right. That's the ideal that a lot of people have about what's right and wrong. This man was successful. It seemed to be working for him. The Bible warns us otherwise. He says, "From such turn away, but rather godliness." You take what's right first, and then let that be your gain. Take what's right from what God says is right. Now, if we continue on reading in verse 20, we'll read about the next man in this story. Let's read verse 20 and 21 in Luke chapter 16. It says, "And there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, which was laid at the gate, full of sores, and desired to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores." So let's look at this second man, what we read about him. Well, the first thing we notice here that I want us to notice is that he's given a name. His name is Lazarus. Now, if Jesus told this story, I don't know for what reason, but he didn't give a name to the rich man. And he gives this man a name. The beggar is given a name. And that might suggest to us that this is a real story. This was a real person, real people that Jesus had in mind when he gave this story. Or he gave this man a name. It also might be for us as a lesson to realize this man has a name. We might find things easier to deal with in our conscience whenever we have the ugly things of life don't have a name. We might find that easier. We might like to keep people that have problems as just nameless people. Not too personal. We might like to think of them as not having real problems, not being a real person with real problems like ourselves. But Jesus gave this person a name. And we notice that he's a beggar. We notice as we start looking at his condition that he's an exact contrast to the first guy that we read. He's not wealthy. He's not pleasant to look at like the other man was. Not comfortable like him in his nice clothes. This man is different. And he did not eat well. He did not eat well at all. It said, you might read over this and you might think that, well, he ate the crumbs from the rich man's table. Is that what he said? If you look carefully, it says he desired to eat the crumbs from the rich man's table. He desired. He did not have this. He did not even have as much as the rich man had for his crumbs from his table. That was his desire. And just like in Romans 8 where it talks about hope, he says, what a man sees, why does he yet hope for? Well, what a man has, why would he yet desire? He didn't have as much. He didn't have as good a food as this man had for his crumbs, his leftovers, the pieces that fell from his table. And this man is such a contrast from the first man. No one would esteem him. No one esteemed him and gave him honor like they did the first man. And now, if you just look at the two descriptions given here of these two men, and think about the choices you make in your life and the way that you pursue your life, which would you rather be? Which do we pursue to be? The first man or the second? Now, I think after we continue and consider Jesus' story, we might would reconsider what we call success in life. We might reconsider which one of these men was successful. Let's continue on now to look at the story as we go on in verse 22. We'll just read this one verse, and it says, and it came to pass that the beggar died and was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. So in the first we see two very different men, but now we see the same thing happen to both of them. Both of them died. Ecclesiastes 3 and 20 says, all go unto one place, all are of the dust, and all turn to dust again. And this is a lesson that we can take to this, is to realize our end. Realize both of these men had the same end. Psalms 39 and 4 says, Lord, make me to know my end and the measure of my days, what it is, that I may know how frail I am. That's something that we should take as a lesson. Lord, make us to know the end, our end. Make us to measure our days, to know that we only have a short amount of time, and to know how frail we are. No matter what we may attempt in this life, what we may try, what we may do in this life, we cannot escape this end, this day. In the New Testament, in Hebrews 9 and 27, it says, for it is appointed unto man once to die, and after that, the judgment. It's appointed unto man once to die, and after this, the judgment. So our success in life should be our preparedness. Our success in life is only our preparedness for that judgment. We might sometimes become so concerned with men's judgment. What does men judge us in this life? And we get too concerned over that when we should be concerned with God's judgment. What's God's judgment of us in our lives? And I think as we're reading this parable here, I think that's exactly the context that Jesus was giving this parable. If you look up to verse 15 of this chapter, Luke chapter 16, verse 15, he said this to them, and he said unto them, ye are they which justify yourselves before men, but God knoweth your heart, for that which is highly esteemed among men is abomination in the sight of the Lord. He said they were those that would try to justify themselves before men. Do we ever do this? Do we ever try to justify ourselves before men? Consider that for yourself. How often do we consider what another person might would think of us? I'm not saying that it's wrong to ever consider what a person might think of us, but think about it. How often do we consider that? When we make decisions, when we decide what we're going to wear, do we consider what other people think? When we decide what we're going to say, or what we're going to do, what we're going to buy, where we're going to go. We consider in making those decisions. We do. We consider what other people think. We do it often. But how often do we consider in those same decisions what God thinks? How often do we consider what God thinks about us and about our decision? Well, that's what should be important to us. And I think that's the context that Jesus is giving this story here, is the difference between man's judgment and God's judgment. We should realize that it's different. That things that God esteem, things that men might esteem as honorable, is not honorable at all. It's an abomination in the sight of God. So how often do we consider what God thinks about us? Let's continue on now. I think we read verse 22 last, and now with verse 23. In 22 we saw that both men died. And we were talking about the rich man. He died and was buried. And in verse 23 says this, "And in hell he lifted up his eyes, being in torment, seeing Abraham afar off, and Lazarus in his bosom." So after both men died, both men were judged. Just like what we had read in Hebrews. It's appointed to all of us. But we see here that there's two different judgments. These two different men got two different judgments. The rich man is in torment. He's in hell and looked up his eyes in torment. And Lazarus in Abraham's bosom. One in comfort and one in torment. Now Jesus in this is showing the error of the worldly view of success. The one man that we thought in this worldly things was successful was really not successful in life at all. It is not success if we gain the whole world and lose our soul. Instead, that would be a complete failure in this life. And we need to consider the eternal consequences of what we judge to be successful here. Our value judgments that we make, putting value on things, consider the eternal value and eternal consequences. Let's continue on and look at the state of this man, this rich man who we once thought was so successful through Jesus' story. In verse 22, "And he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame." This verse shows just how much the roles have reversed after the judgment. When Lazarus had once just desired to have the crumbs that fell off the rich man's table, now the rich man desires the water from Lazarus' finger. It's even more than just turned around. It's turned around and then some. Because he's not desiring for Lazarus. He didn't say, "Why don't you let Lazarus go get him a drink of water, and then if there's any drops in the bottom, I would like to have that." He's not desiring Lazarus' leftovers. And if you read through this, he's not even desiring that Lazarus would dip his hand down in there and give him a little bit of water. Or have his whole finger wet even. Did you see that? The tip of his finger. The tip of his finger. Dip the tip of his finger in the water. Just the tip of his finger being wet to come and touch his tongue. See the state that Jesus is teaching us about this man. It's difficult for us to really understand the punishment of God's wrath and understand the torment of the flame that this man would be in. It's described here as a flame or a fire and torment, but it's hard for us to really get a glimpse. It's hard for us to understand much more than just a glimpse and a comparison in this way of flame of God's wrath. We know the Bible teaches us that the things of this life are not worthy to be compared with the things of the eternal. That also is in Romans 8. It's a terrible state that this man is in. In other places, this is described as darkness, as Jesus talks about the judgment, and some were cast into darkness where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. another way to try to make a comparison so that we would understand what this would be like. It's a terrible state. It's much worse than what Lazarus had in this life when he lay at the gate, desiring just the crumbs and having the sores. It's worse. Let's continue reading in verse 25. He says, but Abraham, this is Abraham's response to what he requested with that tip of the finger dropped in water, that it would come and touch his tongue. But Abraham said, son, remember that thou in thy lifetime received thy good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things. But now he is comforted, and thou art tormented. And besides all this, between us and you there is a great gulf fixed, so that they which would pass from hence to you cannot, neither can they pass to us which would come from him. I think as we consider this man, the state that he's in, we look at the story that Jesus is teaching here, I think that this man would never have suspected that this would come to him. He only received good things in his life. He was so blessed, he would never have suspected something horrible could happen to him. Something hard like this. And I think this should be a warning to us that we would never lightly dismiss eternal consequences. Remember how in other places in Jesus' teaching about the judgment, and he talks about the condemned. The condemned were so surprised. Some said, Lord, we've done all these wonderful things in your name. He said, depart, I never knew you. And some said, Lord, when did we not treat you right? When did we see you and not see you hungry and not give you something to eat, or thirsty and not give you something to drink, or in prison and not coming to you? When did we do this? They were so surprised. And I think this man would be surprised to see the state that he was in. So don't just assume that we will never experience the wrath of God. Don't just make that assumption, but instead, as Peter says in 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 10, he says, but the rather, brethren, give diligence to make your calling and election sure. I know I use that verse a lot, but that's what he's telling us here, is to give diligence. Make it sure. Don't just have a guess. Don't just assume. Consider the consequences of just assuming. But we need to give diligence to make our calling and our election sure. And don't just think that we'll avoid this by default. We'll follow the crowd. We know that's not the case at all. Jesus said in Matthew 7 and 13, enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be that go in thereat, because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way that leadeth to life, and few there be that find it. He said, few would find that straight way, the narrow way, the right way. Many will be on the broad way. I think Jesus is teaching that many are on that broad path to destruction. And as he's talking about here, he's talking about the judgments of men. They might be hearing the praises of men. They might be thinking they're on the right path. We might be hearing the praises of men and thinking we're on the right path, and never think that we were headed for this eternal torment. It's not God's judgments that matter. I mean, it's not man's judgments that matter, but it's God's that matter. It's God's judgment that'll be the ultimate point of this life. And as we see, as we were reading through this story, there will come a point where the judgment will be made, and we will be on one side or the other, and the great gulf will be fixed. There will be no crossing over. No changing at that point. That's what the response was given back to this man. There was no changing. No hope of changing the state that he was in. He's there for eternity. And this man realizes that there's no hope for him. And this is, let's look at what he says after this. In verse 27, he says, verse 27, "Then said he, I pray thee, Father, that thou wouldest send him to my father's house, for I have five brethren, that they may testify unto them, lest they also come to this place of torment." And I think of this as, this may be part of where Dickens got his Christmas Carol story. A man in torment wants to go back and warn someone else who's headed in the same state. I guess that's where I see the comparison of Christmas Carol and this man. He had no hope for himself anymore, but he had hope for these, his brethren. He had hope for others that were still coming the same way. He wanted them to be warned about the terrible state if they didn't come into this place of torment, the place that was waiting for them. Warn them about the way they're going. And look at his answer in verse 29. "Abraham saith unto him, They have Moses and the prophets, let them hear them. And he said, Nay, Father Abraham, but if one went unto them from the dead, they would repent. And he said unto him, If they hear not Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rose from the dead." What would you change if you could look ahead and see the judgment of God? If we looked in our lives and we could see ahead the judgment of God upon us, what His judgments would be, what effect would that have on us? And I think Jesus is presenting a powerful question here, a question that Dickens has captured, and he builds up even more in his story. He dwells on this more, to think that someone would come back to warn those. So do you think that there are people that are being tormented today who live just like you do, just like you're living, made the choices just like you're making, and they thought it was good enough? You think there are people being tormented now, and they wish you could be warned more about your destiny, about your destination, about the end of your path that you're taking. You know, that's a scary thought. They said that movie that they recently made about the Christmas Carol, they said it was scary for kids. They said it might be too scary for kids, and it was a scary thing to see. I didn't get to see the movie myself, but this is a scary thought. And some would say, well, don't preach on scary things. Don't talk about the fear. Fear of God. Fear is a bad motivator. Fear is a bad motivator to keep us going day after day for endurance. But fear makes a good motivator for turning points. I think Jesus teaches us that we've got to have that turning point. We've got to learn to fear God and not to fear man. That's what he says. Matthew 10 and 28, it says, "And fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell." We are to have a good fear of God. But we always want a happy ending. We like a happy ending, just like what Dickens knew, and he gave us a happy ending in his story, where Scrooge has that opportunity. He has that opportunity to go back and to make it right. And we see that happy ending in Scrooge's story, in Dickens' story of Scrooge, where he goes out determined to make the better choices, to make better of his life. And we have a happy ending today in the sense that Jesus has risen from the dead. He has conquered death. He has provided a way of escape. And we have been warned, and we have opportunity. We've been warned of the judgment to come. But we have to obey. We have to hear Jesus' teachings and obey Him. And we have to make use of that opportunity that we have today. Don't continue to make the same mistakes that you've made in the past. Don't continue to make the same mistakes that people before you have made. And that's our lesson for us this morning. We need to make our calling and election sure. We need to realize God's judgments and value that more important than man's judgments. And now at the end of this lesson, we'll want to extend an invitation so that if you need to become a Christian and be baptized into Christ, or if you need to come and request the prayers of the church for strength or forgiveness, if you need to change your life, we give you an invitation while we stand and sing the song.